Welcome to Wildlife Outdoors with your host, Russell and Jose. If you have a passion for conservation of the outdoors, or you're enjoying a calming hike in the mountains, an exhilarating kayak trip on the river, feeling a fish on the end of your line, cooking on an open flame in a primitive campsite, or stalking big game, just waiting for the perfect shot, you're in the right place. So put on your boots and polarized sunglasses and come along for the ride.
Welcome back to another episode of Wildlife Outdoors. Today we have another exciting one for you. So a lot of y'all heard on the last episode that Trout Fest was coming up the weekend after we recorded. And so obviously Jose was able to make it to that. So he did his homework. I wasn't able to. And today we have a guest on that was actually there for 2 days as well. So if y'all would help us welcome, it's Chris Fleury, Blacklisted Fishing. How you doing, man?
Doing good. How about y'all?
Well, we're doing good, man. So have you been to Trout Fest before, or was that your first time heading to it?
No, I think I've been the last three years before this.
Oh, nice. What about you, Jose? Have you been before?
No, man, never. This is my first time going.
That's freaking awesome. Yeah, I wish I knew about it sooner. Wish I could have scheduled to go, because I like going to expos and festivals, whether it's anything to do with fishing outdoors or not. I just like going out and talking to people. I'm kind of a social butterfly in that aspect. So, but so what exactly is Trout Fest for those of the listeners that don't know?
So Trout Fest is Texas's Trout Unlimited chapter. They have basically, it's a big fundraiser every year, and they have the banquet Friday night, and they auction off a whole bunch of stuff. Trips, gear, guide trips, Patagonia. I think Odom's outbid everybody on that a couple years in a row. nice. But mostly, you know, it's that, a big dinner, everyone gets together, and then the Saturday and Sunday they'll have guest people come in, and tires and magazine authors and just people from the industry that are kind of leaders or influential for the past couple of years or in their field, and they'll have talks throughout the day, and then you've got all the different vendors from all the either local companies or big US wide or world companies that come in and set up their booths and a tying tent where you can come and talk to the guest tires or local tires and just kind of walk around and talk to everybody and have fun and, you know, just experience the air. Awesome. And it's right on the river, so you can go and fish too while you're there.
Oh, nice.
Dude, this year the wind was ripping. I mean, it was freaking...
Saturday was a frigid one.
Yeah, dude, I went on Saturday, and I actually wasn't planning on going, but I found myself with some free time. I was like, oh man, I'm gonna go check it out. And dude, it was cold. I mean, I don't know what the wind, what the temps were like with the wind chill and everything, but it was freezing. I remember I was getting this guy was pouring me a sample of a beer, and he was shaking, pouring my beer into the cup. Dude, his hands are all red and stuff. It was bad. So I can only imagine how difficult casting in that wind would have been. It was gnarly, dude.
Dude, that sounds nuts. So I saw the video. It was like kind of like in a tent, so it's like not really climate controlled, or.
Well, they had like a there was one large tent. They had some like vendors. They had some people promoting like their lodges and things like that. There were some fly shops. Like Living Waters had a booth there. I think Tailwaters had a booth there. Gordy and Sons and Fowler had his thing there as well. And there's a bunch of other, like there's an artist there who had some awesome artwork and just various people there. That was like in the big tent. They had a smaller tent, like the tires tent, where they had some tires there doing some demos and stuff like that. And then they would kind of rotate out at the front where they're doing like recordings. They'd have like a big screen and people in chairs and stuff, so people can watch them do the demonstrations there. That was pretty cool. And then they had like an outdoor portion where they had some more vendors, people selling stuff, people giving away samples of drinks and things. And then I think they had like an enclosed, like an actual building where they had guest speakers and stuff doing their presentations, which I actually didn't even go check out any of the guest speakers. I was just kind of just chilling in the tents.
Yeah. I think after 3-4 years, I don't know if I've sat through a single guest speaker conversation. You know, I think it was 2 years ago, Tom Rosenbauer was there. and he had his talk, which, you know, it's Rosenbauer. He's got the biggest fly fishing podcast out there. So, and he's been doing it forever. He's got some knowledge. So he's just a nice guy. So that was fun to listen to. But other than that, I think it's been about 4 hours, 5 hours just walking around talking to everybody. It's kind of just a fun get together.
Nice, nice. What were the breweries that were there this time?
There was.
Was it All Hands was there?
Yeah, I think Real Ale was there also. Mm-hmm. And who else? There was a few distilleries too. Garrison Brothers had a booth there, and they were giving nice. Like samples. And I can't remember who else was there.
I quit drinking 5 years ago, so I stopped paying attention to the breweries. Except for one of my local breweries here in Austin, Adelbert's is the one I love the most. They shut down this year. And even I haven't drank in 5 years, and I was still ticked off that they had to close down because I was like, nobody's going to get to experience what amazing beer they made.
Right, what place is that called?
It was called Adelbert's Brewery. It was right kind of down by the Domain by where I work now. It was just a great brewery, but I guess kind of like everything here, they're all the buildings are leased out, and the owner said, not renewing it, so you're done. And they decided not to find another place to go, so they just shut down.
That sucks, man. I like a good brewery. We used to go to 512 Brewery quite often because their pecan porter on Nitro on tap was phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
I like Twisted X. Actually, Twisted X was there too, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Nice. Yeah. I like a lot of Twisted X, but there's a few that whenever we went to the brewery or the brewery over there was oof. They had some interesting ones. Dude, for sure.
They've gotten a lot better since then. Not to say that they were bad, they're just different.
Yeah.
Very different.
There's a little brewery in Dripping Springs, I think, called Suds Monkey. They're kind of a little they only opened up like 8 years ago or something like that, and I was there right when they opened, and they made some really good stuff, and we played their game nights. I think we won, me and my wife and one of my best friends, we won like their first game night and got like a bunch of free stuff or whatever.
That's pretty
is cool. That the one over there that Jensen Ackles has a food trailer at?
No, that's their own. That's Family Business Brewing Company. That's Jensen's. Yeah,
Family Business.
That's Jensen's Brewery. And that's a really nice brewery. That place
is.
I haven't been there since they opened, but I guess they got hop water now, which is kind of my, I can go to breweries with anyone and still enjoy it because I like it.
Yeah.
There's not anything in it, you know? But that place is like a wedding venue and a brewery and all kinds of other stuff.
Yeah, that place is pretty cool. I went there not too long after it opened, and it was really didn't I go with you, Jose?
Yeah, it was me, you, I think Miguel and Gio in as well, and maybe Maddie Ice. I don't remember.
Yeah,
but that was there was fun. A bunch was of us had gone.
Yeah,
because it's like a family environment. They had like a playground because you and Emily had the kids.
Yeah,
so like we just brought them out there and we were just kind of hanging out and the kids were playing and stuff. So it was a pretty cool place. I haven't been there. That's probably the last time that I've been there too.
They'll have they had the car night a couple of this last summer where they had like the car from the show from Supernatural and then a bunch of other like, you know, really nice ones or people that made their versions of it and stuff. So it's a really nice place out there.
Yeah, I haven't been there in a while, but it was a good time last time I went. So you said that you quit drinking. Are you into mocktails at all?
Nah. And I mean, you could say that hop water is kind of like beer, but I think it's far enough from it to me that it doesn't, I just don't have any, like, not that I want something that tastes like alcohol drinks, I guess you could say alcoholic drinks, but it's not like drinking a soda every time I go. It's just something different. And I don't know if I'll be triggered to like want to drink something. Nothing has so far. I go to bars with coworkers and friends of mine, all that. And not bothered by it at all, but it's nice to go and have something rather than ask for a Dr. Pepper at every single bar you go to.
Right.
So what is hop water? This is the first time I've ever heard of that.
It's essentially just they take hops and they just like infuse it with water, with carbonated water, you know? So it's got it's got that really hoppy, flowery taste, almost like leaning towards an IPA, but no alcohol tinge. It doesn't have that super grapefruity kind of taste at the end of it. You know, it's just a clean kind of summer drink. You know, it's just, it's a good tasting drink that's doesn't really have anything to it. There's no sugar in it, you know, or at least the ones that I drink. So it's just kind of a nice even keel drink that it doesn't make me go like, man, this tastes like a beer. And then, you know,
yeah,
I haven't done it, so I don't hope that I want, you know, suddenly want one, but yeah. I quit cold turkey when I did. So it was just done and over. Nice. And it's been a while. It took about 2 months, and then I was like, okay, not a big deal, not hard anymore. And that was it. So
that's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Man. Me and Jose are both kind of on the, like, we're not against drinking. We just don't really do it much. I think I had a beer during the Longhorn Washington game. And then I had two beers during the Oklahoma Texas game, and then the Texas Alabama game. I had a couple, but other than that, that's pretty much all I've had in the past almost 6 months. So I don't really drink much. I will on occasion though, make me a alcohol free margarita, 'cause I freaking love margaritas. And I was here at Walmart a couple months back, and they have a tequila alternative just made out of distilled apples, and it's alcohol free. Mm-hmm. And I'll use, instead of using like a triple sec or a Curacao, I'll just use some orange, not orange bitters, but orange extract. And then just some water, some ice cubes, and a little bit of agave syrup, and mix it up. And it's close enough to a margarita, kind of lets me get my fix. So it's kind of what I've been doing.
Yeah,
that sounds pretty good.
But enough about drinking. So we're all three fly fishermen. So you were talking to me before we got on the podcast about going up to Washington and possibly getting on some dollies and stuff like that. So in the realm of fly fishing, do you have a bucket list fish that you want to catch, Chris?
I would say right now the one that I've kind of got a little stash going aside for is going to be Golden Dorado probably right now. It feels like it's a cliche one, because in the last couple of years it's been the one that's blown up and you see videos everywhere and everyone's doing it, but there's something about the best of it's kind of that fish that covers everything. You get to fish in a small mountain stream, essentially a trout stream, in super clear water, and it's a fish that hits like a muskie, jumps like a tarpon, and you know, and you all get to fish all this in an 8-10 weight line, and you get to watch it all happen. Yep. You know, it's just that it's that big, and plus they get, you know, what, 20 plus pound fish. You know, it just covers all the bases. So it's kind of hard to think of many other fish. Now, there's barramundi in Australia, and I fished with a guy a couple years back. He had moved here, and he was kind of new to the area, new to fly fishing, and I spent like a year kind of showing him around some of the southern creeks around where he lived on Southside Austin, some good spots to fish. He was a really nice guy, and he was showing me pictures of when he'd go home during the summer, and, you know, they'd be spinning tackle, but they'd be pulling, you know, 30 pound barramundi out, and he had video of this thing just blowing up top water, just the biggest hit. That's freaking
awesome.
You know, but also the place you find barramundis is where you're going to be, like, you're going to be on the shore fishing in water where, you know, 15 foot saltwater croc can come out also. So it's kind of like, you know, it's this amazing fish that's kind of battle fishing, you know, too. Like, there's a lot of danger to it, which, you know, kind of heightens the appeal a little bit.
Right. Absolutely.
It's like offshore fishing. Got to fight the sharks, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, Seychelles is always a bucket list trip, but,
yeah,
you know, I'm not rolling an 18, 20 grand to go fly across the country. Right. I mean, Even the South America for Golden Dorado, I think, comes out to like just over $8,500. So it's not something the normal guy like me with two kids and, you know, a little house and a normal blue collar job kind of. It's probably a once in a lifetime trip.
Right. Exactly. That's kind of how I feel. I'm going to the Bahamas next month and going on a cruise, and I'm going with my girlfriend and her family and whatnot. And we're doing three different stops in the Bahamas. And one of them, we're not doing an excursion. I was just like, this is probably the only time I'll ever make it to the Bahamas. So like, I want to try to schedule some time to go fishing, but it's a big family thing, so I'm probably not going to. But if there is any dead time and I can find, you know, a guide that can just wade me along the beach, try to get on some bonefish or permit or cuda, like, it's going to be hard to say no if I have the opportunity, because I don't know if I'll ever be there again my entire life. But I definitely feel that's like, I was looking up ways to go without going on a cruise, and it's not as expensive as you would think. But you're still looking at, you know, $2,500, $3,000, which isn't easy to come by for me. So it's do I try to risk it and maybe be, you know, ostracized for doing it on a cruise with a family? Or do I just take my opportunity and just say, screw it, you know, they'll get over it, which I'm really not leaning towards the latter.
My wife loves cruises, and I'm just like, nah, I think the worst thing about cruises for me is if I say it's the third stop of the cruise and I get off the boat and I'm looking around, I'm like, this is the best place in the world. I don't want to leave here. I want to stay a couple of days. Well, the boat's going to be like, well, too bad. We're going to the next stop, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So she loves them. She just went on one for her 40th. She went to Cozumel with her sister and all that. And nice. I was like, well, I'll stay here, because even though I know I'd be where I'd be, I was like, I'm not going to get to go fish. You know, I'm like, if I do, it's going to be quick and dirty. You know, it's not going to be experiencing it too. Like for me, like I was telling you about Washington, like I was 3 days in the Olympic Peninsula, like one of the most gorgeous places in North America, the only rainforest in North America. And I'm on 4 or 5 of the nice, best steelhead rivers in the Pacific Northwest. I got skunked for 3 straight days, and I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah, I'm big on experiences myself. And that's kind of why, like, I've never been on a cruise, but it's one of those things where it's, if I want to go to a foreign country or go somewhere different, like, I want to experience their culture. I don't want to be on an Americanized beach of this place that basically you're doing everything you would do in America just there. Like, I want to be dropped off in the rainforest, or I want to go, you know, try to walk down the beach and find some sketchy guy selling some type of meat on a stick that I don't know what it is, but for some reason it tastes good. Like, that's what I want to experience.
Oh yeah.
When I go places,
the back alley food booth, you know, off the main path, as long as you're in a place where you're not going to get, you know, jacked and kidnapped and raw, whatever, but
right, get your kidney stolen.
Well, it's like I've been to El Salvador twice, and I was in 95 and in 01 when I was a kid, because that's where my mom's from. So we went to go visit, you know, Central America, and I was too young. I had a fly rod, but I didn't bring it with me. And now I think about like all the rivers we went by, the areas on like the coast that we went to down there, and I'm like, man, I kind of want to go back. And problem is about the last decade, we never went back because the cartels had pushed in. And like, it was, if you weren't from there, you're getting kidnapped, you know, you're getting ransom off or whatnot. So we never went back. And I guess now it's supposed to be better, but I'd rather go other places now. You know, if I'm going to spend the money to go down there, I'm going to go to Baja, and I'm going to go for roosters, you know, off of Baja.
Dude, right. Roosters on the beach would be, man, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, that's why I know Richard. He went this summer, and you know Mims, and he, from the beach, monster rooster, just jealousy was running high that day.
Rooster fish is one of my bucket list.
Yeah, they're such cool fish, and the fact that you can catch them from the beach, dude, like side casting in the surf, man, that's just...
It's brutal, though.
Right.
They say you'll run up and down the beach all day long, you know, might get a cast of a couple.
Yeah, I've heard that most guys will go and take 4 or 5 day trips, and they'll get one every couple years. Like, there's guys that'll go numerous years, and it takes year 3, year 4 before they even land one, and they're there 4 or 5 days each trip. Like, that's a hard-working fish for sure.
That's another one of those, I don't got that kind of money.
Right. Yeah. Ain't that the truth?
Yeah. We're either short on time or money. Sometimes both.
And normally both.
Yeah, now I got two kids, so time is basically non-existent. My fishing trips during the week are usually crammed into on the way home. I'll call the wife and be like, hey, it's really nice outside. I'm going to stop by the river for 2 hours or an hour and a half, whatever the light's going to give me, and hop in the river, hook a couple carp, have fun, enjoy it, and then head home.
Dude, I want to catch a carp so freaking bad.
Same. Yeah, I've seen a couple of your posts on Instagram, Chris, and dude, you got this carp pretty dialed.
you can thank most of that to Ryan Gold. He lives pretty close to me. We'll go fish together, and I caught my first one by myself, but then he's gave me a bunch of tips and showed me some places I didn't know about, and carp are one of those. Carp is probably the most ignored fish, well, up until the last couple of years. I would say it's the most slept on fish, freshwater fish that's out there on fly rod. You can throw a hook and corn and catch them all day long every single cast, but there's not many fish out there that you at times have to crawl along a riverbank to sneak up on a fish, and if you fart, that fish is gone. Like, it will root your tail down that flat on that shallow water creek, and it's just gone. And then if you're lucky enough to get a cast and you get it too close or you slap it or any of that, it's gone. Like, and they're smart too. You'll have the wrong fly for the day, and you'll drop it right in front of them. You'll see them stop feeding. It'll turn and then just go back to feeding. And then you'll have some days where I had one where I had a leech fly on, and I dropped it perfect right past it, drug it over its face, dropped it down. It turned, sucked it in. I set the hook. I guess I set too early. It pulled it right out of its mouth. And this fish turned and chased down that 2 feet that I had pulled that fly out, sucked it in again, set the hook, didn't hook it. About, another 2 feet of slack. Fish charges down the fly, set the hook, hooked it up, and, a good 3-4 minute fight. Had in there, took the picture,
freaking awesome.
Gave my glory shot, and set it back. But the carp around me, hill country carp, are about as close to redfish as you can get in freshwater. They'll back in the shallows. They'll spook the same way. They charge down a fly that they want the same way. How they damn near look the same when you're looking at them from above. And if you got carp around you and you want to go red fishing, you haven't go red fishing, and you practice on those carp and you go catching at those carp, when you go red fishing, you're going to catch redfish. Like, you're going to hook up. You're going to be, you got to get it within the same perimeter of their face. It's about the best practice I could tell anyone to go catch redfish is to go carp fishing.
That's awesome. That's a good tip. That's something that I've been red fishing more than I've been carp fishing. And I have a bunch of carp that come out in the springtime right behind where I live. And I just need to get out more and practice a lot more on them. And it's weird because I've been more successful on redfish than I have with carp. But my goal this year is to get on some carp and get on some freaking gar.
Yeah, I've caught grass carp in Houston, but I've hooked into it very small amount of comments, and they've whooped me every time. And then last summer, I actually put in some time to try and find some carp spots and actually go after them a little bit, like with more purpose. And I found some, but dude, I didn't realize how spooky those fish were. Like, I remember I was sitting on the bank and I was watching this one feed, and it was still kind of a ways out, further than I felt comfortable like casting with any kind of accuracy. And there was some stuff behind me. So I just had a very small window. So just kind of waiting for the right shot. Dude, this thing was feeding. I probably sat there for like, I don't know, 30 minutes watching this fish. And then, dude, I don't know what happened. I don't know if I moved and it just saw me or what, but this thing just like spooked. It just saw something it didn't like and was gone. So all those 30 minutes, I just sat there waiting for nothing. And then I stumbled upon a few other fish, but again, like, I would try and put a fall, like I maybe do one or two false casts and try and lay out the fly, and they would just I don't know if it was my fly line freaking them out or what, but they were just gone. Never really got an actual shot at those fish. It was crazy how spooky they are, man.
Yeah, that's wild. The other thing sometimes is they'll help you practice your no false casting, or at least keeping it down to one, because if they're really in clear water and they're in shallow, they'll spook from the line above them. So
that's insane.
Try and get that one cast out. Get good at roll casts, because you're gonna be up against the shoreline, you know, sneaking up along the tree line, and you're just gonna have to roll cast out to them nice and soft. And you know, it all depends. You might have a heavy fly on, so you know, I'll add an extra. If I gotta get down to them quick, but they're still spooky, I'll add another 4 feet to my leader. You know, you'll have a 12, 13 foot leader, and you drop it way past them and then drag and drop it right on their face. And it's about the only way you can catch them on really spooky days, is you have to drop it way far away from them and drag it over to them nice and quiet. But there's other days where they'll be feeding like crazy, and you can just plop that thing on its face and you'll see it twitch an inch over. You'll see its gills flare and puff some mud out, and that's pretty much your hook, you know. It's kind of like when you see a redfish and they're digging on the shoreline, and you throw a crab out there, and you don't see them inhale it, but you see their gills flare and their tail twitch. You know that's the inhale, and so you just set and make sure that you makes don't
trap. Right.
So yeah. is carp like your go-to fish to chase here in Texas, or do you have what's your favorite fish?
Carp is my, if you give me a day to go out and chase something, say I got a day, I'm going to go out and fish for stuff, I'm going to go fish for carp, but I'm going to bring flies to go for quads. Cause you get a lot like the Llano, you know, the Llano is a river that got hit hard from the floods years back, and it's coming back pretty good, and there's some amazing fishing there right now. But the carpon's also really, really good in certain sections, and you can go, and if the carp just aren't out, you can throw on a big woolly bugger and just destroy the quads. And most of my fishing's on a 4-weight glass rod. You know, I'm not catching 10, 20 pound carp around here in the creeks. There's some bigger ones, but most of my fish are going to be 5 to 8 pounds, you know, just smaller fish. They're really scrappy though, so but you can go with lighter weight, and a 4-weight glass is going to handle a quad all day long. You know, if you're a little squeamish about fighting them, you know, you can tip it up a little bit, but this is the nice thing about glass is it protects the hell out of your tippet. You can just kind of bear down into them. Once you got them hooked, you can really fight them good and you know, put a lot of bend in the rod, and you're not going to break the tippet most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, I love glass rods. I actually built a 6-weight glass rod not so long ago, specifically for carp, but I like fishing it for quads and stuff. And like bass around here in local ponds a lot too. It's just more fun to me. Glass rods are a blast.
Dude, I need to finally build mine. I got the blank sitting right over here. It's staring at me right now. But I need to do something with it, because the only glass rod I have is that 2-weight. And that thing is fun.
That's
especially
a fun
when
rod
you land
too,
like the 12, 13 inch channel cat pulling on a 2-weight glass is fun. But I need to get mine made actually.
You guys are in an area where you're also in bowfin territory. If you haven't caught one, you need to go after some bowfin. So I've caught them up in Arkansas, where I caught my first one. There's Lake Conway that's down right just north of Little Rock in Conway. And that's got a ton of bowfin. I've sat there and watched hundreds of them come up and down. And I hooked a pretty good one there. And then actually over there in the over by Houston with the Sam, there's a lot up in there. I can't remember what's his name that wrote the book about
Rob McConnell.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he was writing his newest release, was it Fly Fishing Houston, Southeastern Texas? He started doing some more bow fishing, and he's like, guys, you gotta do this, man. Like they're so aggressive, and then when they're mating, like the males, I think it's the males, they get really colored up, like that blue and
they
like,
get the green fins, almost. Those crazy green.
Yeah, he's like, dude, these fish are sick. And he said he hooked one, a nice one, and it like dug itself down in the mud or something. He just lost it. But yeah, those things are crazy.
They fight like hell and they get big.
Yeah, they do. I know they recently drained Lake Conway, so I don't know if they're still in there. I don't know how low they drained the lake, but I know that they had a lot of repairs to do. So, I mean, they even opened up all fishing regulations on it, you know, no limits, any species size limits or anything like that. So I think they completely drained the lake, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I caught mine in the slough that's south of the lake. On the south side of the lake, there's the dam, and then you go across the dam and go into the back public, and there's the big slough that's back there. That's where all mine were. So even if they drained it, they're all back in there.
Awesome. Now, I also want to go fish Bayou Bartholomew because I know there's a lot of them over there too. I've seen them over there breeding and you know, seeing huge, you know, balls of fry and stuff. And I think it's pretty cool. And so I work over
in Pine Bluff often.
What?
And is over there snakeheads.
Really?
Yeah, snakeheads.
Oh, yeah.
I've only seen one video actually from like up in the Heber area of some snakeheads, but I've never seen any with my eyes here before.
I poked one in the Little Red River. We were wading in the middle fishing at Swinging Bridge right there in Heber, and the dam had lit out, and so you're standing in the middle of the river and you're like, da, 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 and all of a sudden the water starts picking up. If you've ever been in a river when 25,000 CFS starts coming, you skedaddle quick. And so there's about five of us that are all kind of like just rushing for the shoreline. And we all get up on the shoreline and we're hopping along the grass balls that are there up against the shore. And one of the guys yells, "Hey, snakehead." And I was like, "No, that's a bowfin." He goes, "No, look." And it kind of crept out from under some grass and you could just see the tiger stripe pattern on that thing. And I had a woolly bugger on, so I dropped it on its face three or four times. It just ignored it. And then it just swam right into the current, and it was gone. But they're in the Little Red River now. And then east of Heber and Little Rock, there's a lake or two, apparently, or ponds that are supposed to be just chock full of them. Really? I know years back, Arkansas Parks and Wildlife found a lake that was just packed full of them, and they did a total kill. They put in that chemical, and they killed literally everything in the entire lake to try to eradicate it. And they said, "Oh, okay, we successfully killed everything in the lake." And then, like a couple months later, the lake, like a mile away, they found them in there too. So I think they stopped trying to do the poison off kills. But you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they're in Texas in Caddo Lake by this point, just because if they made it to Arkansas within the last 10 years, they move pretty quick. I wouldn't doubt. And apparently in the East Coast, and I think Carolinas or Virginia's where they first found them, it was kill on site. And now there's scientists doing all kinds of studies, finding out that, yeah, they're invasive, but they're not a detriment. Like, I guess they found out that the bass are controlling the populations, so they eat all the fry and they can't spawn like absolute crazy and eat everything else, you know, out. So now you can catch and release them, which is kind of weird to me, but
yeah,
I'd love to catch one. The last time I went, I tried to find a water that had them to go catch them right there in Arkansas, but didn't have a chance.
Dude, I think I had heard about that. I don't remember if it was a Hookshots episode or if it was one of Joe Cermelli's podcast episodes, but they're talking about snakeheads, and that's one thing they were talking about. Like, everyone, I guess when they first started being like caught and stuff like that, everybody was freaking out, thinking like they're just going to take over and just like destroy our native wildlife and all that stuff. But it's kind of really not been the case. They haven't had the effects that people had first thought they would, and kind of like you said, there are other things that are controlling the population. So yeah, they are here, but they're not like destroying the ecosystems like everybody thought. Almost like I guess like carp in a way. Like carp, technically, like, they're non-native. Well, they're naturalized now, but at this point,
I would say snakeheads are pretty much naturalized. They're like common carp. You know, they kind of spread like crazy. You'd have some people, the bass nutheads that insist up and down all day long that carp, you know, eat every bass egg in the river and whatnot. But I mean, I could find a puddle behind Walmart and there's gonna be bass in it. So, you know, I mean, 120 years of carp, they're pretty much part of the ecosystem now.
Exactly. I did find one paper where they did notice a decrease in bass populations, but they had a really, really high population of carp in like a small area. So they say, I guess it's like density dependent. So if it's super dense, then it can cause some issues. But like typically carp are kind of, I guess, a smaller portion of the overall biomass in the stream. So they won't typically cause like a lot of the degradation and issues people will think about. Grass carp are a bit different.
Yeah, well, common carp, big head carp, yeah, especially those are the big ones in the rivers in Mississippi that are destroying everything. But it's like, don't quote me, but because I'm not going to say 100%, but like Florida bass and largemouth bass are non-native to everything, almost everything west of the Mississippi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I think originally, like, again, don't quote me either, cause I don't know, but I want to say that the strain that we had in Texas before they started like hybridizing with Florida strain largemouth, I think it was like the Northern strain largemouth or something like that. And then they introduced more Florida largemouth. And so like, yeah, it's kind of just changed things. So in a way, largemouth bass, at least the Florida strain, has kind of changed the game a little bit as well in terms of how the bass fisheries originally were.
Yeah. And I mean, exactly. I'll go after guads any day before I go after largies. You know, there's guads are like fishing in Texas for brown trout, and they love quick water. You know, they're not huge, but they blow up almost everything they hit. I've had a guad come 2 feet out of the water hitting a streamer.
That's awesome.
Dude, it always surprises me how aggressive they can be for such a small fish. Like, I love it, dude. That's one reason why I love guads. Aside from just how pretty they are, they're fun to catch.
Speaking of guads, did y'all see Odom's guad that he caught last week or the week before?
That was a chunk.
Dude, that thing was a freaking football. You'll see it tomorrow, Jose. I asked him if I could use it as our catch of the week. That thing is freaking massive, dude. It's a freaking solid football of a guad.
Dude. I think mine's like my biggest quad's maybe, I don't even know, dude, like 10 inches, 12 inches, something like that.
Yeah, that's around what mine is.
I've done like more than a handful, probably 10, 15 over 14, 15 inches, but not, they're not fat. You know, they're not big chunks. Yeah. Like nothing that's going to break any of the records, but just long, still muscly fish.
Yeah.
Russell, did you ever see the record guad in Living Waters Fly Shop?
The one up there, up on the wall, above the door? Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, that thing's freaking nice. That thing is freaking nice.
I think it's not even 4 pounds, right? I think record's like 3 pounds, 11 ounces or something like that, 312.
Yeah, it's like 3.78 I don't remember. But yeah. Something
now,
like
I've seen a picture that apparently of a catch and release of a guad on a river that easily, there's no way this fish was under 4.5 pounds. Now I can't tell you, I mean, without testing, you can't say it's 100%, you know, could have had smallie in it. There's no telling. It's in a river that has them, but, until you get it tested, you can't tell, but you could tell it had guad in it. So, had the tongue patch, had everything, and it was a monster fish.
Dude, 4 pounds awesome. Guad would be crazy.
Yeah. That's
Can you imagine how hard that thing would fight?
Yeah.
I mean, because I get a bend in a rod from a little 9-inch guad. Oh, yeah. I couldn't even imagine a 4-pounder.
That's the other thing where glass is so much fun. You know, you're tossing like Ryan Gold and a buddy of mine, Ricky, they tie some of the best hair bugs I've ever seen. And I've got a pile of hair bugs that I've just been given. And you're doing a Dahlberg diver across the top and you have a, you know, 13, 14 inch guad slam that thing and you're fishing a little four weight glass. It's just, I'd rather do that all day.
Blast.
Yeah. You know, than fish for largies. I mean, largemouth are fun. Don't get me wrong. It's not like I hate them, but where guads live and the way that they fish is more fun to me. You know, it's just, I like fishing better. I like fishing rocks. You know, You're hitting the current, and you're waiting until it drifts behind a rock, and you're popping it around because they're hiding in the current break. And you know, it's a knock on trout, but it's kind of like fishing for trout. You know, it's like fishing for browns. They sit in the same areas that those predatory trout sit, but then they attack like a bass. You know, they slam top waters. They come out, you know, they jump like crazy. So you got big jumping fights, and they fight twice their size.
Yeah. That's why I like fishing for smallmouth up here. It's very similar water as what a guad hides in. And dude, it's so much fun.
Dude, and I agree with you, Chris. Like, I guess the nice thing about largemouth is they're everywhere. I mean, you can catch them anywhere. If there's a pond somewhere, you can catch them. So that's a nice thing. And they get big. There's few places in the country where, you know, largemouth get bigger than they do here in Texas, Florida, California, maybe Georgia. I think the record came out of Georgia, but I mean, for the most part, Texas produces some monsters. But the guad is just, like you said, for pound for pound, they fight so hard. But two, you can catch them nowhere else but in Texas. Like that, that is really, really cool
to have our own. You know, that's our fish. That's Texas's fish. You know, I mean, hell, it's the state fish. So on top of that, and then, you know, it's like, there is this, I think someone's got like a bass checklist for state. Like there's the red band bass, and then there's, I guess, the red eye bass or whatever. Like there's a list where you can go from all the like South states and catch all the different particular strains of bass that are very, very micro local to that area, which that I think would be a lot of fun to do and go around and fish all those waters. And I guess someone like work sends me to Washington, cause that's one of our hotels is up there and that's where they do it. But we've also got a hotel in New York. So there's kind of that like maybe they'll send me to New York during the striped bass run on the East Coast, you know, which would be cool as hell to do, or just face, you know, some of the best native brookie waters in the U.S. You know, you get up in Maine and the upper states, closer you get to Labrador. I'd talk about a bucket list fish, Labrador brookies. You can mouse for brook trout, and the smallest brook trout you're going to catch all day is 4 pounds.
Dude, that would be freaking amazing. I want to catch a brookie so damn bad. Like, I want to catch a native brookie, but at the same time, like, I would be fine just catching one. Like, I just want to catch one in general.
Yeah.
Dude, I just want to go mousing. I think mousing anything, brown trout, whatever, would just be so much fun. If it's a brookie,
you can mouse for browns and rainbows up here.
You go at night and you mouse for browns, and there's a guy that I know. I'll do shout outs if that's all right. His name's Cody Griffin. He's a guide on Little Red River, and I think he does the White also. I booked one trip with him, just a half day, but I think he's pulled out two over 32 inch browns out of Little Red River.
Oh wow.
And obviously the White's the river that's talked about. It's the one that's packed full of browns. Everybody loves it and catch them. Mm-hmm. But I think Little Red River is just 100 times more pretty river. Like when you go to, you float it, when you wade it, it's just a pretty river. There's, you know, there's little cuts. There's little kind of just forested ends, you know, up along the riverside. And it's just got more attitude to it. I love that river.
I like the Little Red. I've only been once. I've only been fishing there once. And, dude, I tore up the rainbows there. I didn't even see any browns, but tore up the freaking rainbows.
Where did you and I go fishing, Russ? Was that Little Missouri?
We went to the White, yeah.
No. Like when you first moved to Arkansas, we found the little.
That was Lake Catherine on the Washita River.
No. The river where you fell and almost where I thought you broke your arm or whatever.
That was the Little Missouri.
Okay, I thought so. Little Missouri.
That river. I have a love-hate relationship with that freaking river.
Oh, I'm busting my butt in Little Red River, and it's all on the GoPro too.
Yeah, I didn't have my GoPro running at the Little Missouri.
Dude, we were walking this trail, and Russell was in front of me. He had a wooden net like hanging from his pack, and he had his fly rod. I remember I turned to look at something, can't remember, and just hear a crash, and I hear Russell yell, and I look, and dude, when he was laying there, his leg looked unnatural. I thought he straight up broke it. I was like, oh, I was freaking out. And then I heard a crack. And so I thought that was his leg, but dude, he got up just fine. And it turned out to be his net that snapped, but it was just busted. But dude, it was
busted pretty my butt so many times. And one time was years ago, it was on the quad fishing for trout, but I'll fish it. I think the Guadalupe is like an absolutely gorgeous river, even right there in all the main runs. It's an absolutely beautiful river, but I'll fish it when it's 30 degrees out and there's no one else out there. You know, I don't like being shoulder to shoulder with 10 people on a hole. It's not fun to me. That's why I don't do the white bass runs, which they're about to start here. I've been hearing it, and I went to the place right down the road for me to go see, because wife actually got excited. She's like, well, hell, let's hit it this year and fill up the freezer on white bass, because I mean, we ain't poor, but when $500 fills up half of a shopping cart right now, why am I not going to go for, I pay a lot of money for my gear. Why not go and use it to get something back other than just a little bit of, meditation time? So I thought about going, tested it out. Guys said, yeah, they've been running and they were catching some, but it wasn't like when I'm waiting for a peak, when I can get off of work, go there and in 1 hour, fill up half a stringer or a full stringer, when they're full run, you're casting, you're just cast, catch, cast, catch, cast, catch. So hopefully I can do that pretty soon here, but.
Yeah, I think in about a week or two, they're going to start running here, and there's a river up here. Well, it's kind of like it's a smaller body river, and they run heavy in there. And then later after, like towards the end of the run, you start getting into the Hy-Vees, and then occasionally the strappers will start running up there. And one of my buddies from up here caught like a freaking 20-pound striper in the creek last year. Like, I want to try to get on a striper so damn bad, but the whites for sure, I'm definitely going to go get them. So they're fun. Yeah. I'm actually thinking about maybe this weekend, maybe just going and doing some bank fishing with my kids and try to get them on some whites, because they run heavy in this area that I go to.
You can just throw some bait, some minnows out, and just let them hit it, and kids will have a heyday with it.
I want to try to get my youngest on the fly rod. First time I got my oldest on the fly rod, she caught over 100 fish in 24 hours. So she freaking, slayed them. And my youngest has used a fly rod twice when she was like four. And she couldn't really get, it's a lot for a four-year-old, but she's six now. She's a little more cognitively comprehensive. So I'm hoping I might, especially if it's during a white bass run, just throw, some type of little bait fish pattern on there and maybe get her on one. And I think it'd be awesome for her to catch, a little white on a two-weight glass.
I'm trying to ingrain it in my kid's head. He'll be two here this next month. And for the last year, I've got a broken butt section of one of my glass rods. And I put a junk reel on it, and that's one of his play toys, so it's in his play place, and he runs around. He likes the clicker on it, so he reels it, and it clicks and makes noise, and he can swing it around all he wants, doesn't really break anything. Well, he was hitting my computer monitor one day, but that stopped it. But, he loves playing with it. He likes clicking, and I'm like, well, that's just kind of my, indoctrination, I guess, just get him to where this is fun to play with, and then once he gets older, you can still go with just regular stuff if you want to get him stuck to it, but you get him just that little, you can do a little light glass rod, they're only 5-6 feet when you do the smaller weights, 2-3 weight, and you find the closest panfish spot, where all you got to do is throw a little ant or a popper, and that kid will catch a fish on every single time he puts that thing in the water. He may get tired of it after 30 minutes because he's just bored, whatever. But during the 30 minutes, he's going to have an absolute blast catching every single fish that he can. So,
absolutely.
And I've got one of the big backpacks. I've got one of the big backpacks that he fits in to go hiking with. And we went down to one of the river parks here that flows into Lake Travis. And I was fishing, and my wife was taking video and picture, and he is just losing his shit, cracking up every time I'd cast. Like, he thought the line flying past and going on the water was the funnest thing in the world. So I'm hoping, things to look forward to. And then we just had our girl. She's 2.5 months old now, and my wife was asking about her. I said, nothing different. She's going to love to fish, too. She's like, what if she doesn't? I was like, no, she's going to love to fish.
Yeah. There ain't no ifs, ands, or buts about it. See, I got two girls that are 14 and 6, and the 14-year-old's kind of not having it right now. The 6-year-old asked me the other day if we can go fishing when I picked her up from school. So she's into it, but the oldest one, she's a teenage girl, I mean.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they'll get out of it for a while, but then they'll go back, so...
Yeah, exactly. So you've been talking a lot about like fly patterns and stuff like that. You seem pretty well versed. Do you tie?
Currently, no. My whole office is packed up in boxes because I'm trying to redo the flooring, and then I decided to have more kids and got no time. But no, once you'll see screenshots and videos come up once I get it done, and I'll post it all on my Instagram. But I've got a pretty big tying collection now. I don't sell anything. Well, I've sold once. Someone asked me for some. But I tie for myself, and I don't tie, you know, people say you're never going to save money tying. I don't think you're going to save money if you go out and buy the best vise and then you buy all the highest amount of gear. But if you get a peak vise and you buy hooks in bulk, you can buy Gamakatsu hooks on almost every single one of their type styles of hook in 100-pack. And you can buy a 100-pack and save, I mean, you save hundreds of dollars over the course of tying those versus if you buy in the little 10-packs or 20-packs. Mm-hmm. And you use materials that either from the fly shop or you recycle, you know. Anyone that goes and buys foam from a not Hobby Lobby is, you know, wasting their money, because for foam sheets, right, you buy from Hobby Lobby. You know, I just posted one the other day about a wine cork. I was one of my things me and my friend like to do is go thrifting just for fun, and I found a diver's bag, one of those big, you know, like 30 quart bags or whatever, and it was, we got about 2,000 wine corks in it. And so we brought them home for decoration to do like arts and crafts and stuff like that. And I was like, I've got a million Jack Crevel poppers in here and bass poppers now. So I'm going to start tying those up. I love tying. I've got one crab pattern that I like to call my own, but I looked online for like a week before I posted and said, I'm going to name this because I think it's my own, but if someone knows that this is someone else's pattern, I don't want to be a pattern pirate. I don't want to take someone else's idea that they thought of and say it's mine. But it felt similar yet different enough from most that I had seen out there that I decided the one that I named it. Well, I named it the Blacklist Crab. Not very original, but you know, I've got an idea to change it up and there's a new little thing that I'm thinking to use the same one. I'm going to call it a face hugger. It looks kind of like a alien's face hugger. So
that's awesome.
Hopefully I'll get my room all back together here and tie soon. And I've got everything, you know, my neighbor said he got a rooster he wanted to get rid of. I went over there and broke its neck and plucked its feathers. You know, I live in the
side of a free farm. Hackling.
I live on the side of a farm to market road, and squirrels get wiped out all the time. I will literally walk out there with hedge clippers and snip their tail off and hang it from the tree and let it dry out and throw in a bag full of salt and borax, and it dries out, and I've tied tons of redfish and carp flies with it.
I saw a whitetail that got hit the other day on the side of the road, and I was driving by. I was like, I wonder if I can get that and make some bucktail. Like, by that point, vultures were there, and it was all swollen. I said, I'm not going to deal with that one.
I would say bucktail is the most that I would do with roadkill when it comes to a deer. I think it's one of the few where buying a properly, like, clean, tanned, and dyed patch of deer hair is the way to go from a shop.
Right.
But, you know, the tail, you can slice it off and dry it and get the bone out and skin it. And usually just salt will do what you need to keep the hair long enough. But
dude, I got a buddy. He likes to hunt. And he messaged me one day on Facebook. He's like, hey, man, you tie flies, right? I was like, yeah. He's dude, I got some bucktails. I got some deer tails. You want them? I was like, yeah, man, sure. And so I gave him my address. He sent them to me in a little plastic bag. But the problem is, the deer here we have in Texas are very different than the northern whitetails, so the tails are much smaller.
Oh, yeah.
And the fibers are also much smaller. So I was able to use them to tie some like clousers and things. But if I ever wanted to use it to tie like bigger streamers, I'd have to buy some store bought like northern bucktail, the big bushy.
The best deer come from north. Winter deer from up north. You know, I grew up in northern Minnesota as a kid, and I remember moving here and they talk about deer hunting, and you know, northern whitetails are like the size of Texas muleys. They're just this monster deer, but you get them in their winter hair and you just got these huge, super hollow, thick coats, you know, so they're the best for bass bugs. And I barely can spin deer hair. I'll tie with bucktail, but I get the experts like Ryan and buddy Ricky and them to do deer hair poppers and stuff for me. I'd like to get it down one day, but
dude, that guy Ryan can spin up some pretty flies, dude.
Yeah, no, he's awesome. He's a great guy. He ties like nobody else when it comes to his redfish flies and his poppers.
He's the one that did that at the fly trap, right? They had like a fly time a week or two ago.
Yeah. They've moved to the new location. That's an awesome shop. And yeah, talk about a guy that dedicates every day to fish and trying to get people into fish. And Fowler's just, the dude lives, breathes, sleeps, eats, shits fishing. Excuse my language, but
he is a fishy guy.
He's a cool guy. Every time I go down there, I try to stop by the shop, and if I've got the money to buy something, I'll buy something from the shop. And he's right there on the water, and I haven't got to go to the new location, same building, but you know, now it's like three times the size of the old shop. So you know, I hope nothing but that place grows and grows and grows and just becomes the, for me, it is the shop to go to on the coast. And you know, down in that Port A, Rockport, Fulton, Corpus area, it's already my shop to go to. But hopefully anytime anyone goes down there, that's where they're gonna head.
His shop is sick.
I want to make it to go see the new location or see the new area of the building, because last time I was there was a few months back. But dude, I might even make a special trip down there just to go see the new place. And obviously I have other stuff I can do down there, but Chris is a real cool dude.
Hey, let me know when you're down. You do it during a weekday, and I've got my little skinoo. I call it a nano skiff. It's even smaller than a micro, but it'll fish two people on it. So
really,
you come during a weekday and I can get away from the kids. The wife works on the weekends. I work during the day. So once she goes back to work this weekend, after this is paternity leave and she goes back, I'm back to basically never having days off. Because if I'm not at work, I'm taking care of kids.
Yeah. Well, I'll let you know for sure. But since we're talking about, you know, tying and stuff, obviously I've said numerous times that I don't tie as often as I should. But Jose had an idea for us to start doing Instagram lives or other forms of live stream for tying. Which you saw, Chris, that I tested out the other day to try to even learn how to do an IG live. But so I think that we're actually going to be starting this hopefully sometime soon. We're thinking maybe once a month, once every other week or so, to do some like live fly tying. So for you listeners out there, if that's something you're interested in, you know, coming on, we plan on having people, you know, guests every once in a while come on, and you know, we'll have like a panel of us just tying and BSing and you're just kind of hanging out. So
we're still trying to bounce around a few names. For sure. Oh, yeah. There's a guy that's actually right by you. His name's Goose Guides or something, Goose Guide Flies or whatever. He guides right up there in northern Arkansas, southern Missouri. So you say Fayetteville. I keep thinking you're up in that area. I'm not exactly sure where you're at.
Yeah, no, I'm in Hot Springs, so I'm pretty south central-ish.
Okay. Yeah. But he does, I've been following him for a while, and him and this other girl, Lara, she's up in Montana, I think. They do tying all the time on Instagram, and I'll have the alert going, and I'll pop in and watch them and BS with them for a while. I haven't gone on live, but the great thing about the Instagram is you can have someone that just wants to join in, and they can request to join the tie and just pop in on the video and just start tying. I think it's a good idea for everybody, you know. you can, if you know how to do some stuff and you want to learn something, you can ask someone that's in there tying and they can show you right there. And then if you got a question, they can answer it.
Yeah. And yeah, it just kind of came about because I thought it'd be a cool way to kind of like get some more people engaged and everything. But also, I mean, it's pretty informal. So like, you know, it's really just kind of us just BSing and tying and to give people, like, if they want to ask us any questions or if they want to see something specific, if we can, then we can facilitate that. If not, then hopefully we can get some guests on who do know those things. But,
right,
you know, just something to kind of reach out to more of our listeners and kind of just try and boost some engagement and get some more people involved and stuff and hopefully learn some things and teach some things too. But I think it'd be pretty fun, man. We're not pros. I mean, you've probably seen photos of our flies, but yeah, man, I think it'd still be a pretty cool time just to be able to like ask questions, BS. And cause you know, especially like when it's live here, people don't, you know, they hear it a week after recorded or whatever, but at least then they can just write in and hopefully if we see it, we can answer whatever. So we kind of pretty neat little deal. But in concept, we got to test it first.
I think you guys should do it. I mean, like, you know, you guys could do it during Fowler's live tying. They could have a camera going up over everybody and you could record if you want, you know, while you're doing it. But you could have everybody there tying, you guys are tying, everybody's talking and just make a fun night of it. You know, start off with a month. If it becomes a lot of fun, do it bi-monthly and, you know, however it ends up working out for you. Don't do what some people do and try to go all in at once and then 6 months they burn themselves out and they don't like it anymore. Whereas if you space it out, you can still enjoy it. You know, tying's not work for me. Tying's the other aspect of fly fishing. It's sit down. To be cliche, it's therapy. You know, you sit down, you zone out, you're just tying, you're enjoying it, listen to music, listen to videos on YouTube or whatever, watching them, but you just kind of zonk out and you're not thinking about anything else except, hey, I need to tie this piece right or I need to get this or it's going to fall apart. And it ends up just being another part of the therapy that is fly fishing. You know, you enjoy doing it for doing it, not for making a couple bucks out of it or whatever. And that's not to knock anyone that makes money out of it. I mean, one of the reasons I especially went to Trout Fest this year was to run into Fowler and Bennett. You know, Matt's a cool ass guy, makes some of the, you know, lunch money and brunch money or whatever. There's some of the best locally, you know, targeted flies for local fish.
Yeah.
In this area.
Carpet bomb. Didn't he make the carpet bomb too?
Yeah. I mean, he's made 3-4 patterns that are targeted just to like hill country fish and work amazing. And everyone swears by it, which, you know, I'd still be tying more. And it was nice to see him here and wish the best for him in Louisiana and give an excuse to go over there and say, get down to the coast and let's catch the 40-inch reds. Be nice.
Right. But
it was nice to see him and see him tying and hang out and chat for a minute. So that was pretty cool.
Right. Yeah. I think I need to try to make it down next year.
Dude, you should. It was, I enjoyed it. Like I said, this is my first time going and I went just kind of on a whim, but I had a lot of fun, man. Met some cool people, learned a lot. Like the fly tire tent, they had a bunch of really good fly tires. Chris mentioned, Matt was there. Fish chase flies. Zach Harris.
How do you say his name? Kowaleski.
Kowaleski.
He was there.
Fish and flies. Chris Kowaleski. Yeah. And yeah, man. Like I learned, and Steve Maldonado. He was tying these. What are they called? Jungle Junkies. And I learned a lot about for some reason, I don't throw big flies. Like I fish a lot of small stuff, but I like tying big flies. So I picked his brain about stuff, learned a lot, but yeah, dude, it was pretty sick.
You want to go for some big crazy flies that use 4 or 5 materials, but you just keep using them. Start looking up musky patterns. Those guys that tie those 12-inch musky flies that use half a cape worth of chicken feathers, you know?
Right.
Dude, have you ever seen any of Gunnar Brammer's videos on YouTube? That guy.
Not that I can recall. Can
dude, he ties a lot of like hollow stuff and tube ply stuff that are freaking massive. He's a really good tire too.
Yeah. He's also a very good teacher, but no, he ties like, 10, 12 inch like musky and pike flies. But it's crazy because they're big, but dude, he has a video of him casting one on a 5-weight. It's just like, because it's just all feathers and.
Yeah, they don't weigh anything. So they're bulky.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was crazy. I was like, damn. And he was launching them. He was launching them too, yeah, on a little five way.
And a zero wind day. And you do it on a five way with a 15 mile an hour crosswind, it's going to hit you in the face.
It ain't happening.
Right. Well, I bought one of Chase's, the massive, you saw the massive changers he had up there. Those big 10 inch changers he was tying.
Dude, those things are huge.
Yeah, I had him tie me up a white one. I've got it on my rearview mirror. It's my fuzzy dice, you know. They're hanging from over there. But nice. I've got a friend that brought me offshore this last year. So I caught my first, like, baby, they called chicken Dorado. It was like a little 12-inch Dorado. And then I caught, like, I caught a Remora, and I caught a bunch of blue runners and whatnot. But there's about a 6-7 foot hammerhead circling the boat while we were out there. And I had my 12 weight with me, and I was throwing like a 4-inch changer that I bought from Chase like 4 years ago. If you want to see how long those flies will last that he ties, a $20 fly. And I was like, yeah, I've got this thing for 4 years and it's still fishing and catching fish. It's made his money 10 times over, you know, but right. It didn't, yeah. that shark didn't even notice that fly. Like it was not even, didn't even twitch. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to huck this thing out there at him next time and see if I can get him to take it.
That would be freaking awesome. I've always wanted to catch a shark on the fly.
Well, the shark almost got you that one time.
Hey. Yeah, that, every time I think about that, I'm like, God, that could have been so freaking bad, dude. So bad. Dude, like I wouldn't, there ain't no way I would have made it back to the beach. Like it was, I was too damn far out there. And the surf was so freaking rough. Did you hear about that, Chris?
No.
Oh, dude, I was out surf fishing in Florida. And so I went and talked to a fly shop there just outside of Destin. And he told me the spot to go to where there's a little convergence of a river and the beach. And he said that striper or tarpon and snook and all sorts of, you know, redfish, everything were cruising through there. It's a hot spot for them. And it was like super windy that day. And the swells were like 3-foot swells. And he said, if I make it out to the second sandbar and cast out at the turquoise water, like that's where I'll get them. And I was like, so I was gung ho, dude. And I get out there ass crack of dawn in the morning. And I wade out there and the water's like waist deep in the trough of the wave. And then the waves are breaking damn near over my head. And so I had to like swim to the second sandbar, and I get to the second sandbar and I see this turquoise water he's talking about. I'm like, hell yeah. And so I'm casting, I'm getting beat to hell by the waves, and I'm having to jump and try to like double haul real quick and try to send it out. And I see probably, you know, 30 yards away, 45 degrees from me, I see this big shadow, and I'm like, oh dude, that looks like a freaking tarpon. And so I'm getting all ready, and I get everything all ready, and I start and I cast at it. And then I see it like kind of turn towards me and start coming closer. And then I realize it's like a 6-foot bull shark. And every time the waves are coming, my feet are coming off the ground and it just freaking charges at me as fast as it can. And I start trying to beat it with my fly rod, and it comes within 6 inches of me and turns back and takes off. And my heart was freaking pounding, and I was like 200 yards from the beach. And so I turned around as fast as I could, and I tried to get back.
Oh,
and
man.
Yeah, dude, it was, oh, my heart was racing. I sat out for about 15 minutes. And I was just like, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and sit here for a little bit. I calmed down, and then I didn't go past the first sandbar after that. Like, oh, dude, I was freaking scared. See,
I say similar, but not really close. I actually drove all the way to Tampa to pick up that skinoo a couple years ago. And I blasted it. I went straight to Tampa. I don't even remember how long that drive was, 12, 13 hours, something crazy. I picked it up, but then I stayed overnight at a guy I know. Well, I don't know, you guys ever play paintball or video games?
Not much.
There's a game called Greg Hastings Paintball back in, like, I guess Xbox days or whatever. Well, I met Greg Hastings himself. He was one of the pro players a couple years back, and he's just a really cool guy. He said, if I ever come to Florida, just come stay and we'll go fishing. So he brings me, stay at his place, and he brings me out to the coast there, and we camped on a sandbar that had been kicked up on the last hurricane, and so even high tide doesn't like go crest it. But I mean, high tide's lapping at your tent door. And so we camped overnight, and you could see tarpon rolling, like, and we're talking 100-150 pound tarpon or bigger running. This is Tampa Bay. This is where people have caught 200 plus pound tarpon out of this, you know. this area off the bridge and stuff. And so there's monsters that are running through this channel that's right on the sandbar. And I'm wading out. I'm probably, like you said, you know, like chest deep, but the waves aren't really like breaking. I'm just kind of on a big flat. It's about chest deep. And I can see a bait ball moving about, say, 60, 70 feet. And so I'm just ripping a double haul as hard as I can. I'm coming up a little short. It's a little windy. And same as you, I see a shadow. I just flop it right in front of the shadow, and I start stripping straight towards me. And it gets about 20 feet from me, and this black tip just comes fin out of the water, back tail of the water, just splash and just charges this thing hard as hell. I mean, water turned brown, and I started running. I didn't hook up. I just said, you know what? I'm going to go off, and I'm going to go and see if I can catch the snook that are running the shoreline after that. And I didn't get anything, and we took his boat out, and he's got this little, you want to talk about crazy, it's an 8-foot, like, Zodiac, little inflatable, with a 25-horse two-stroke on the back of this thing. Holy so God. We're just ripping. We're ripping down the Gulf in this little 8-foot boat, you know, in waves and chop. And we go to this area around this buoy, and we had seen some big tarpon rolling, and nothing. And then all of a sudden, I've got 30 feet of line in my hand, right, ready to cast a big one. One false and drop it. And he goes, tarpon, left side. And I look over, and I mean, it's 12 feet from me in the boat. So I do like a flop cast, you know, you're trying to just whip it around and not. I don't think I could have hit that tarpon more squarely in the eye if I tried. It was the worst cast you could have ever possibly made. And like eight just monster 100-plus-pound tarpon just blow up and scare off.
Oh,
they're gone. There went my chance. But then we saw another big bait ball about 200 yards away, and we chased it down. I was throwing nothing. I switched to a little, you want another example of how flies are weird? I had like a 4-inch tarpon bunny I was casting at him because it was what was on my rod. And didn't get a single hit. And this is a monster school of fish. I mean, there's 500 plus fish in this school. And they're pretty big. Just couldn't tell what it was at first. And we're just casting into it. And then all of a sudden, one of them side flashes where I can see it. And it's just all Jack Crevel. Just this monster school of Jack Crevel. And so I went in. I put like a 1.5-inch glass minnow that I had tied on some really stout saltwater hooks. Mm-hmm. And by that time I'm done tying, they had moved off and he motors over, and I threw one like 30-foot cast, dropped it in there, and that dang fish burnt my fingers pulling the line out. It just hooked and just screamed and just tore out of there. And it was probably only like a 10-15 minute fight. And I'll send you guys the video later, because I've got it on video, and I've got it right next to the boat. And then this 6-foot shark just comes up at it, and it tears off straight away from the boat about 60 feet, and it dives down and is under the boat before I know what's going on. And so it just 180s my fly rod, and it snaps a 12 weight like it was a twig.
God damn.
Dude, that's insane.
And you can hear it. You can hear it. You can hear me shark, shark, shark. And then you can hear the rod snap. And are you kidding me? Yeah,
dude, that freaking sucks.
Freaking sharks. Wild. Saying we got it in the boat. I got pictures with it, and you know they wanted to keep it because they'd never caught one. So we ended up smoking it, and it was actually really good smoked. So,
dude, that's freaking awesome. Last time I was down in Rockport, or I was in Port Aransas, I took my new kayak out, and I saw this huge school of jacks, and I didn't get a cast off. I ended up catching a freaking hardhead, but. Dude, it was freaking, I mean, they were breaking like crazy. It was crazy because I saw, you know, birds working. And so I hauled it out there and I'm paddling. And of course it's a regular, you know, it's a bona fide SS-10-7. And so it's not pedal drive or anything. And I'm just going through these waves, and it was rough. And the water was, I mean, clearest Texas coast I've ever seen. But there were still some waves and I was breaking through them, and I get out there and I follow these birds, and there's this huge school of jacks, and I just couldn't even get a cast off in time. And then the boat kept freaking turning. I didn't want to get flipped. And so I paddled a little bit and then tried to make a cast and ended up catching a hardhead. It was a good size hardhead. And then actually, I think it was a gaff top. I think about it. It was a gaff top. And then I start heading back in, and then I got flipped. I've never flipped out of a kayak day in my life. And I'm coming back to the beach and get freaking flipped. Lost everything.
Is that when you went with Victor?
Yeah, that was when I was with Vic. But yeah, dude, I wish I could have caught one of those freaking jacks because it was a massive school.
It's about coming up. I mean, you know, late was it kind of middle late spring is when the runs start happening. Port O'Connor's the big jack place because Port O'Connor's got the main channel into the Gulf right there, and it's kind of the big channel and goes straight into the bay. And that's most people. If you want your most luck on jacks, you're going to go out and target somewhere around Port O'Connor probably. And I haven't caught one here local, so hopefully this year I'm gonna got everything ready to go for them. I'm gonna try to get a glass 10 weight actually, and try and catch one on the glass and a click paw. I got one of those Kubalaya saltwater click paw reels. So.
Oh yeah, I've seen those. Those things look sick, dude.
No drag.
How do you like it?
I think it's a great reel. It's built like a tank, you know, for just a pretty simple reel. I'd say they're expensive for a pretty simple reel, but they're built really, really solid. So, but you know, it just kind of adds another layer of difficulty, I guess you can say, but kind of more, there's more fun to it. There's more to it. You know, you can tighten down your drag and fight them, or you get no drag and you palm drag, and you know, it's a little more up to you. So I want to try it. Some people call it crazy. I think it's just a little more fun.
That sounds like a blast.
Click and paws are pretty cool. I love click and paws. Especially like on little lighter glass rods, they're like perfect for that.
Yeah, that's what I have in my 4-weight. That's what I fish for carp with. Most of my carp with are all on the 4-weight glass and a click and paw.
That's pretty sweet. Awesome. Well, we're coming up on an hour and 20 minutes, and we're held basically to about an hour and a half for every one of these. So we're going to have to start getting ready to cut it out soon. Is there anything else that either of y'all want to cover before we do that?
Yeah, the only comment I'll say is if you miss Trout Fest this year, definitely check it out next year if you can. Also, there's there's another fly fishing festival coming up soon in Dallas.
That's this weekend.
Oh, it's this weekend?
I think it's this weekend, right?
That was called?
What's the date today? 23rd? Yeah, it's like 24th or 6th, I think. Something in Brews.
Fly fishing, brewing, or whatever.
I would go if my wife wasn't going back to work. I'll even throw the kids in a stroller to go to them and just do something, hang out. Like, you know, I had the kid the second day in the stroller, and then usually if they have it again this year, there's like the Flies and Flames one that's here in town on the west side of town. That one's kind of a fun one. They have it out that one of those wedding venues, kind of like a. Looks like a small little western town. That's kind of a cool one. I don't know if they're doing Oktoberfish this year. If they do, it's not at the venue it's been at by Fredericksburg. I think they're switching venues. So
I just looked it up. Awesome. It's called the Texas Fly Fishing and Brew Festival in Mesquite, Texas. It is this year, February 24th through the 25th.
Yeah. So it's right here this next weekend.
Yeah.
Either of y'all going to go to the Fly Fish Film Tour?
I want to.
Nah. I mean, I like going to them. I don't have the time. I wish I did. My time is very, very valuable now.
Yeah, I feel that. I've tried to look, and it seems like every time they're anywhere close to me within a 4-hour radius, I either have my kids that weekend or I'm going to be out of town that weekend. And so if I'm going to go, I'm going to have to drive at least 6 hours to go to it. And to me, I just don't think it's worth it for that. I mean, I love going to the Fly Fish Film Tour, but it doesn't seem like it's going to be possible. There's one this weekend. Our friend Steven up in Northwest Arkansas is going to the one up there. I think they're having it in Bentonville or Rogers or something like that this weekend. And I wish I can go to it, but yeah, it's not looking like it's in the cards, unfortunately. Yeah.
No, they're fun, but can't go to it. I guess if I have any last thing to say, just because I got lots of friends in the industry, if you haven't fished waters and you can afford it, book a guide, book a local guide that lives in the area. You know, that it's what they make their living on. We got a ton of good guys down here. You've obviously got Alvin doing the river, and you got his guides. You got lots of guys on the coast. You know, shop from your local guys, buy from your local tires. You know, they tie for your waters, or they're helping out your local fishing community. So if you're in the area, you know, stop by the local shop. Don't stop by the big box shop if you're able to. You know, there's times I'm not able to. And yeah, Yeah. Sometimes I have to stop in the Bass Pro and grab something really quick, but is it what I want to do? No. Support your local guys. They'll love you for it. They'll give you advice. They may not give someone who doesn't, and just try and keep up with that. That's what I try anywhere I go, is to shop local and buy from local tires, book local guides. There's lots of guides that'll hop all over the place. They'll go to whatever season is hot, but, book the guy that lives there.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm a huge supporter of, for one, shopping local, and secondary to that, taking a guide if you have the means to do so. Every time that I've gone to a new body of water and I've used a guide, like, I have learned so much, and that knowledge is so valuable, and I can go back to those waters now and fish and be successful on a DIY trip. And I've also made some damn good friends meeting guides and hiring guides to go do stuff. So I definitely agree with that.
I mean, you can't always book.
Right.
I can't always book, but if you can, do it.
Exactly. So, but hopefully soon we'll get a fly tying live. And once you get your, fly tying table all set up and your office and or flying station ready, just let us know. And we'd love to have you on for a live, and hopefully we get that going soon. But other than that, man, we appreciate you hopping on. It was a good conversation. You're welcome back anytime. And yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Appreciate you hopping on.
Make it from where it was, a College Station. You make it over here, let me know. We'll go hit some water.
Heck yeah, man. Sounds good to me.
Maybe you can help him get on some carp this year.
I'll put you on carp. Whether your casting can do it is up to you.
Oh, I'll definitely be the limiting factor there. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, thanks for hopping on. And for the listeners, thanks for listening to the very end. And we'll catch y'all next time.
This has been Wildlife Outdoors. Thanks for listening. Follow us on Facebook at Wildlife Outdoors and on Instagram at wild.life.outdoors. Let's go live life on the wild side.